to come directly into harmony with this reality right now. Just simply say, when doubt arises, not to. In this not to, nothing is separate. Nothing is excluded. I'm so moved by this morning's work. So moved that we all felt that we could participate in the way that we did. Not one way to participate. I was thinking about when I studied for a short time in Japan, when I studied with this marvelous man who didn't speak a word of English, and I didn't speak a word of Japanese, and we spent weeks and weeks together, spending the entire day and night together, just the two of us. And one morning, he, over breakfast, we had a dictionary, this huge English-Japanese dictionary. So we'd kind of point at words and make some kind of, as he called it, conversation. It was like a miracle that any words actually passed through. Felt like that. And he wanted to know about my wife, because I had a ring. And he kept pointing to the character for wife. And I kept saying, no. Not really. That's like college. Been a long time since I was in a fraternity. And I would point to the word for husband. And it was so disturbing to him. And his look of disgust was hard to disguise. And it was terrifying. I was alone in the mountains. Really. And I felt like we had this amazing, you know, Japanese fantasy Karate Kid part 10 moment, and it all was destroyed. Yeah. I felt reviled. So I hiked down the mountain and to speak to his son, who lived in the village near there. And his son was said, you know, oh, I'm sure that is not the way it is. And I was like, well, I think your dad might hate gay people. He said that's impossible because his understanding of the Buddha Dharma is so beautiful. So he must have a misunderstanding. And the next day, we got up as we always did around 3:30 in the morning, swept the yard in the moonlight, swept the decks of the halls, had zazen, chanted in the Buddha hall, and had breakfast and conversation. As if nothing happened. And at the end of the breakfast, he made a deep, full prostration to me and said, "I'm so sorry." And not a word more was spoken about it. To come directly into harmony with this reality, just simply say, when doubt arises, not to. In this not to, nothing is separate. Our bigotry and our healing of our bigotry. Nothing is excluded. In his bow and in his way, I felt healed. What was so painful and feeling reviled, and the capacity for the teachings to be, we can remind each other of what the teachings are about. To be that receptive to keep learning. That it's never too late. To do really unskillful things and come back. So humbling. So the quality that we're exploring this afternoon together is equanimity. One of the four sublime states. But to me, what's most important about it is that it's an alive state. It's about being in relationship fully. It's not indifference. It's, as Bhikkhu Bodhi says, it's stability in the face of what's constantly moving. So beautiful. Amidst the shitstorm, being able to be there completely. Amidst being reviled and be able to stay in relationship. Being nervous and staying present, using that to connect. Feeling shame and saying, "Wow, I feel so ashamed," instead of doing something else. Bhikkhu Bodhi says, its evenness, the quality of its evenness, gives us an unshakable freedom of our minds. That kind of stability and quality of connectedness gives us, it's so amazing, right? Unshakable freedom. Our ability not to be reactive to everything. My favorite story about this is He's like a constant test. Keeps my pack practice fresh. Driving me crazy. So amazing, right? Senkan, who is the third Zen ancestor, went to his teacher, Huiki, and said, I'm riddled with sickness. I'm riddled with it. Please absolve me of all of my suffering. Who hasn't felt like that? Riddled with your mishugana. And Wakey said, you know, bring me your sins, bring me your suffering, and I'll absolve you of it. No problem. After a long pause, he said, when I looked for my suffering, I can't find it and give it to you. And his teacher said, see, I absolved you. No problem. All you need to do now is take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. Give yourself fully and not hold back anything to the Buddha and Dharma and Sangha. How many of us are willing to do that? This teacher, the third ancestor, many of us love him so much. He's probably pretty curmudgeonly like the rest of us. Actually, I kind of remind him, he always makes me think of Chodo. Come on. There you go. There you go. So beautiful. He said, the great way is not difficult for those who have no preferences. When preferences are cast aside, the way stands clear and undisguised. But even slight distinctions made set earth and heaven apart. If you would clearly see the truth, discard all of your opinions. That's all. Who's ready? You? If you just remain in duality, he says later, you will never know unity. A friend of ours named Ira Byock, who is a wonderful physician, tells this story. To me, it's very much about equanimity. Steve was a Montana cowboy dying of emphysema who used his unwanted illness as an opportunity to mend fences with the people who mattered to him most. He was dying in a hard way. When the hospice team met him, Steve was struggling for every breath that he had. Unable to walk without gasping for air. Yet unable to sit still because of that anxiety had defined his entire life. He was scared of dying and suffered through every waking moment of his life. By vocation, Steve had been a lineman for the phone company before a heart attack and his emphysema forced his retirement. By avocation, though, he was a real Montana cowboy, living for his horses, winning numerous riding competitions, and the affections of many for his willingness to teach horsemanship to many and to any child who wanted to learn. He was that kind of guy. He was a man's man. No one expressed emotions and even admit to even having an emotion. Often work and his horses had come before relationships and his family. And the specialist had exhausted all hope, including a lung transplant that he desperately wanted. Although he was dying, his wife Dot was his constant companion, a nurse and a co-sufferer. It was out of sight for more than a minute. If she was out of sight for more than a minute, he would ring his bell or shout in his panicked, muffled voice, "Dot, Dot, Dot." It took Ira's team a few weeks to gain Steve's confidence that they could actually serve him. I love that patience. Through a combination of counseling and mostly pragmatism. This included meticulous medication management, relaxation tapes, and practical suggestions about his big lazy boy recliner. As we learn more about his history, we realize that his anxiety stemmed in part from the fractured nature of several key relationships from his complex and conflicted life. One Tuesday, when I was visiting with Steve and Dot at home, I told them that over the years I'd observed people very often saying the four things that I suggest people to resolve before they die. Please forgive me. I forgive you. Thank you. And I love you. Those are really good, Doc, so he said. Will you write them down for me? At my next scheduled home visit, Steve was sitting up awaiting my arrival. He and Dot excitedly related the events of the past weekend. On Sunday, their children and grandchildren had come over for dinner. At the table, Steve announced that he had some things he needed to say. you know, the doctors tell me that this emphysema is finally going to kill me. And I know I haven't always been the best father or the best husband. But I love you all, and there are some things I want to say about it. With his eyes on his handwritten list, he recited the four things in his own words to the people who mattered most to him. The effect was so remarkable. Although his anxiety did not totally disappear, in the wake of his remarks, its grip completely fell apart. Tenderness and affection that had not been present, if ever, were now evident in all the family's interactions. Steve's life didn't become easy, but it became less anguished. The quality of Dot's life and the family certainly improved. Ironically, as he faced life's end, Steve said that he was happier with himself than he could ever remember in his life. In the process of dying, he had become well within himself and helping his family become closer and open and loving. To me, this is what we're doing here. Looking to become a bit more open and loving. Or at least I am. That's my secret mission and my wish for you all. So, to me, that's our work. And to be equanimous in a very alive way. Standing on the ground of the Dharma. Standing on the ground of receptivity, to me, allows us to learn how to be in attunement with how much, to be in balance. The famous layman Pang says, food and clothes sustain body and life. That's it. I advise you, though, to learn being as is. When it's time, I move to my hermitage and go, and there's nothing to be left behind. Thank you.